Paul Smart is with us on the telephone, so we're going to get started.
Hello.
Yeah, there he is.
How are you?
Hey.
What a beautiful morning.
Absolutely. You are, Paul, if you just joined us, Paul Smart is with us by the magic of technology over the telephone.
Yeah. Well, what an interesting little public service announcement that was about the new SNAP program. The new name for food stamps. And in a very succinct way, a great explanation of what that program does for our country, which kind of raises or highlights some of the discussion that's been going on whether we need food stamps or not, or how many people are on food stamps, and whether that's a good or a bad thing.
Well,
kind of an interesting side to highlight on all of that.
Yeah, well, you have to qualify for the SNAP program, and if you qualify, you're pretty much broke.
And it is probably
one of the few programs that is a 100% stimulus, because every dime goes back into the economy, goes right back to agriculture.
And right into our local economy, too,
right.
Our local stores, et cetera.
But it gets that program gets a bum rap.
I know. It always has. hopefully it always will.
That's my opinion, folks.
Yep. You brought up the whole pumpkin walk this past weekend. We know we're coming into fall. It's a time of corn mazes and haunted houses.
All over the place.
Well, in Elizaville, there's also an uncovering of a little bit of other stuff going on, but we don't need to go into story. The Columbia Film Festival up and run by the Chatham Film Club wrapped up this past weekend. It's turning into quite an auspicious annual event.
Coming downtown was quite an adventure yesterday. There were a lot of people there.
I know. Well, I mean, look at some of the films that broke there. You have Bill Murray and Laura Linney and Hyde Park on the Hudson, all about the, talk about perfect Academy Award fodder. You have FDR and Eleanor Roosevelt meeting up with the King and Queen of England. I mean, that has Oscar written all over it. You also had Dustin Hoffman's first credited directorial effort, Quartet, Alex Gibney's new documentary, Silence in the House of God, Silver Lining Playbook from David O. Russell, who's a kind of great filmmaker who did a few years ago, I think it was called Four Kings. And then on a local level, you had Chris Loken of Love Apple Orchard, or recently late of Love Apple for Orchard, since they just sold it. His screenwriting debut, Love Orchard, also showed at the film festival. So, good on that. It's just a lot of people, and it's kind of a great way of supporting culture in our area.
Yeah, it really was big.
Yeah, were there stars out? Were there Klieg lights? Tell us about Chatham.
In beautiful downtown Chatham, whenever we get too many cars for the public parking lot, then we know we've hit it big. Okay. Main Street was alive there. I've never seen. I rarely see that many people on Main Street in Chatham. So I knew that it really had gone over big.
Well, that's great. With a combination of that and all the various festivals, music, the animation festivals hitting Greene County, and the kind of constant flow of fun events in Hudson, it looks like we're rebranding ourselves, this northern stretch of the Hudson Valley. It's about time, and it's a good thing, and it seems that it's drawing everybody together in a good way. Also drawing people together in not so good a way is the fact that, just as we talked about a few weeks ago, you can sort of tell you're on the tail end of a recession or bad economic times when the state controller, county controllers, and and local controllers and accountants all start getting really busy trying to pull in whatever money's lying around out there. And what's happening is that not only are local towns getting audited, but fire companies are getting audited, and there's a lot of difficult things starting to surface. In Hudson, turns out that there are three firefighters under investigation following the reported theft of thousands of dollars from the accounts of the C.H. Evans Ladder Company number 3. There's similar things going on. Audits have been going on in Carroll and Durham. There's one up in Prattsville, poor Prattsville, where a lot of their records actually disappeared with Irene. They managed to come through unscathed, or come through a recent audit unscathed. Probably the saddest of the whole bunch is it's actually all the way over in Woodstock, but this is somebody that I've known for years, a lawyer, a former town board member, lawyer with the Catskill Center, kind of prominent environmental activist, Dale Hughes. Got arrested for basically pilfering $220,000 over a six-year period. A lot of it coming from pancake breakfasts and the like. And he was trying to put the money back into the coffers, but it's just really hard when you see pictures of somebody somebody who's an upstanding citizen, wearing that horrible orange suit, in one of those police lineup shots.
That's so sad.
Look for more of that, more of these sorts of investigations of welfare fraud, of unemployment fraud, et cetera, going on over the coming year. I mean, there's another thing in Greene County last year where the New York State Department of Taxation and Finance announced that it had been investigating two Greene County residents who they're saying committed 18 felonies involving tax fraud and grand larceny, both of them out of Tannersville, and most of it happening through one of their businesses, an auto shop. And, it's not huge amounts of money. Up there it was $13,812 falsely filed, but, it makes the newspapers, it gets everybody on edge, and it's just maybe a sign that we're coming through something, but it's not soon enough. I remember this back in the early 90s as we started to recover from the first Bush era's own kind of recession. It also happened in the mid-1980s during the Reagan years, and it just seems to happen periodically. It's just something that we hope we can get through unscathed without too many people getting caught with their hands in the till.
I gather the temptation must be very strong, but, you can't do it. That's as simple as that.
I know. It's hard. Especially in small communities like we have up here where we all know each other.
Right.
And it feels more like a violation, in those circumstances. Same happens when the local fire department, somebody gets caught as a firebug starting fires.
Right, exactly.
The local police department, something happens, it starts to break down trust. But at the same time, the fact that these instances come up and people get caught and we all survive it reinforces trust. At the same time, the system does work in a way. Other things out on the news horizon, the town of Taconic decided to pull back from its fracking moratorium it was about to pass based on a recent judge's ruling on a similar fracking moratorium down in Binghamton. And watch that, kind of work its way through the greater court. It's interesting when both candidates, the only thing they can agree upon in these presidential debates tends to be natural gas exploration.
I found that ruling very interesting because I think some towns have already passed their moratoriums, correct?
Yeah, quite a few down in Ulster County, and in a number in Columbia County, not much in Greene yet.
If I'm not mistaken, if I understand what this judge said, he's basically saying if there is no imminent possibility of hydrofracking to being done in your area, then you don't have a right to have a moratorium. Is that just, do I have that right?
That's sort of what it's saying, but what has to be discerned at this point is how you then word a moratorium against the side effects of fracking in one's community. There's a lot of concerns about the use of fracking detritus, the sludge from fracking, as a way of melting the snow and ice on the sides of roads. And there's also concern about these large trucks coming, with these toxic materials coming through town. So it'll work its way through the courts and become more specific, these moratoriums. Or what you might also get is a less kind of emotional and more realistic sense of opposition or just dealing with fracking on a regional and national basis. A lot of towns where the biggest opposition to fracking exists, according to the geologists I know, there's no chance of there being any fracking there. So it then comes down to specifying what the side effects and also, how a larger community can, state and legalize its opposition.
Yeah, well, that should be interesting going down the line, especially in view of that ruling.
Yeah, but it's going to take a while to play out. I mean, give it, I'd say through 2013 before we get any specifics, especially here in New York State. On the other hand, kind of some fresh news is over in Greene County. A new land conservancy project is popped up in the Caro area, covering 90 acres, and it's called the Northeast Regional Land Trust, and our hats go off there. It's these local land trusts and land conservancy actions. This is a great way of just reinvigorating environmentalism on a local level. So, we're all in favor there. And some interesting little side things happening in the news over the last week. We were interested in Chatham when some white, I don't know if you saw that little story about white powdery substance being found in a book.
Ah, yes.
Chatham Public Library, and next thing you know, the whole school was.
Yes, that was it. We had a very interesting time in Chatham.
Yeah, everybody got let out early, and then it was kind of found there. It was nothing, really. It was just nothing. Although I do remember, God forbid that they should look through those. Remember those double albums and all the things that used to be found in the streets of those.
and what they used to put in the Sunday paper.
Yep, that's true. Then there's up in Taconic Hills. There's a whole thing kind of starting to percolate up there, and it matches similar efforts around not only the region and the state, but all over the country, where 300 people signed a petition asking the school district not to dictate their children's food choices. And it all came up because the school district, the board, was under good advice trying to limit the sorts of snacks a kid could eat during the day. I know my kid, he's going to go for a salty and sweet and not very good for himself. Although he does have a real taste for apples, I have to say. But, there's this kind of standard American response to whenever somebody comes in and tells you what to eat. It's like, nope. We're going to eat what we, darn want to eat.
Yeah, what was actually happening is the sports teams, when they were at an away game, they would stop at a McDonald's or something on the way back. And,
because it sounded like it was also having to do with the snacks being offered. They're saying not to go to the McDonald's.
It's a kind of a two-way thing because it turns out that some parents were not happy with the fact that they were stopping because the children got home too late to do their homework. And then other parents were not happy that they weren't stopping because then the children went for a long period of time without eating. So I think they came to some kind of a mutual agreement, I think, about sending a box lunch with them.
That's good. That's a good. Thank heavens for compromise.
Yeah. I'd like to see more of that.
Yes. So speaking of compromise, we're going to be compromised driving around over the next few weeks as we see out the autumn. There's a lot of road repair work out there. It's like everybody's trying to fit it in right now while it's not raining and before the snow starts falling. So, and it's also partly because, you know, some of the costs, asphalt, other kind of materials have come down slightly. I don't know if you noticed, but the gas prices kind of took a significant little drop.
Are dropping down rapidly.
Yep, and so what you're going to see is a lot of road work out there. It's all going to get crammed into the next few weeks. On kind of countering that or on a similar level, there's a report in the Albany Times Union over the last few days about how home remodeling spending is set to increase in the coming year, both for the final part of 2012 and into 2013. And this is something that we noticed when we did a couple stories this past summer with local contractors, and there weren't as many new home starts, but everybody was really busy, and they were busy doing, remodeling kitchens, putting on new porches, doing home repairs that had been put off for quite a few years. And it's another sign that things seem to be returning to some form of normalcy, although what that new normalcy will be is anyone's question.
I think what's considered normal is not going to be the normal that it was before.
Speaking of that, look, it sounds like the train's coming by.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've noticed, a lot of squirrels out there, and it turns out it is a phenomenon that the mild winter this past winter and then a bumper crop over the past summer has met an explosion in the squirrel population. All throughout the Northeast, and you see it on the sides of the roads with the amount of roadkill left over from this population explosion, and we're also hearing that starting up in Vermont and now coming down into our own area, that there's a whole phenomenon of squirrels kind of waiting up until the apple harvest is just right and then swarming into the trees from nearby forests and sometimes eating up to half a tree's fruit in 2 or 3 hours, and not finishing their meal as one should, but just taking a bite out of each apple, kind of ruining
well, I can tell you from my rural home, the population of squirrels and woodchucks on my property is literally doubled, and maybe even more. They're all over the place.
And they've lost all shyness, too. Have you noticed that? They just come right up.
Oh, yeah. They're bold.
Yep, they are. Imposing. Stepping back into history, with a little bit of help from Wikipedia, on this date in 1844 is one of my favorite moments in American history. It's what they call the Great Anticipation. And a lot of it took place right in our area. There was a group called the Millerites, and they were followers of a man originally from Vermont, but he spent a lot of his time kind of in northern Rensselaer, southern Washington County, a fellow by the name of William Miller, who anticipated and predicted the end of the world in conjunction with the second advent of Christ. And he started proselytizing, predictions were published in a number of newspapers at the time because it sold newspapers. It's sort of like the Mayan thing coming up in December. But his his first date was in, I think it was in the spring of 1843, and you know, he said, you know, everybody's got to prepare. So whole towns would shut up their houses and get dressed in sackcloth, and, you know, these kind of, you know, misshapen you know, gunny sacks, and climb out to the highest hill outside of town and wait for that second coming. And the first time it occurred was in late spring, that kind of mucky time of year, and nothing happened. So Miller went back and, you know, reconfigured everything and came back and said, nope, it's taking place in late October on
Are you there? Whoop. Did I just lose Paul Smart?
Whoop.
I just lost him. Oh, I love the wonders of technology. I think I just lost our phone call, folks. We had Paul Smart with us. We were going over the news. And, of course, we're doing it by telephone. So whenever you do these things by telephone, anything can happen. So, That is what happened. Let's see. Well, you know what? The nice thing about being a station that plays music is that you can always revert. Guess whose birthday it is today? Okay, so if you're older than dirt, if you watched the Mickey Mouse Club when you were a kid, then you know whose birthday this is. She was the one on the Mickey Mouse Club that all the boys fell in love with. Annette Funicello. Wow. Annette Funicello is 70 years old today. The one of the original Mouseketeers. And she had one hit. And let's see if Paul calls me back while I play that one hit for you. She had one hit in her entire career. It was called Tall Paul.
Chalk on the sidewalk, writing on the wall. Everybody knows it. I love Paul. Tall Paul. Tall,
yeah, sure. Paul. Yeah. I can't remember that you were called. It's an empty hotel.
He's my all.
Call right back.
Chalk on the sidewalk.
Chalk on the sidewalk.
Dishes on a tree.
Dishes on a tree.
Everybody knows it.
Everybody knows it.
Paul loves me.
Tall Paul. And speaking of Paul's, he's back. You made it back,
I'm
right?
I'm back. No, and I did not get, you know, I did not get sucked up into the second coming of Christ there.
That's right.
Anyway, what I was getting down to was that after all these people climbed out of their towns, and this is all over our area too, they called the day afterwards the Great Disappointment. Which Miller kind of faded into history, but his group, the Millerites, became known as the Seventh-day Adventists, and they're still around to this day.
Oh, yes, so, they are.
You know, it's a theory that I and a lot of other people have, is that out of that whole idea of disappointment came kind of the growth of all these secular movements in our country, from abolitionists to suffragists, to kind of the rise of industrialism in America, and that you know, it kind of shifted us to for a while, at least, away from a nation of kind of evangelists into something a little more progressive. Although there's also those who believe that we, you know, we may be shifting back at this point to something more like Millerites. other birthdays going also going into history today, and Daniel Boone's birthday.
Ah, Daniel Boone.
And how about this for a matchup with Daniel Boone? Timothy Leary.
That's right. It is Timothy Leary's birthday. See, I was watching Daniel Boone on television, the weekly show.
Oh yeah, he'd throw that axe and it'd hit his name. Wasn't that part of it?
Wasn't that James Arnaz?
Yep, I think that was.
Yes.
I think that was. You know, other people, Squeaky Fromm, who actually has retired into our general area. She's not in Columbia Green, but she's not that far away. She's up in the Mohawk Valley. Famous for being one of Charles Manson's later an attempted assassination of Gerald Ford.
Yes.
Musician Daryl Jennifer, who's the bassist for a kind of proto-punk band, The Bad Brains. And Daryl lives in Woodstock and plays around the area quite a bit. Shelby Lynn, who's a pretty fantastic singer and songwriter. And then the two of my favorites, the American guitarist and singer songwriter Bobby Fuller, who wrote the great I Fought the Law and died very mysteriously. You know, some say he was from drinking kerosene or something, just out in Los Angeles at the height of his success. And then little known but kind of fantastic singer and songwriter Eddie Brigati, who was one of the lead folks in forces behind the Young Rascals, later to be known as the Rascals. So it's, you know, a little bit of an auspicious day here.
So we have the person who sang I Fought the Law and the Law Won.
Yep.
And the Young Rascals.
And the Young Rascals, of course, you know, you've created a lot, you know, It's a Beautiful Morning, Groovin', a bunch of kind of major hits of the 1960s. A lot of them, you know, have had a second life in remakes by younger bands.
Well, through the miracle of technology,
yeah.
I just happen to have both of those songs queued up.
Well, what do you know? And through the miracle of technology, you've had me there in the studio, even though I'm sitting in a parking lot across from a creepy-looking cemetery out in central Massachusetts. I look forward to being back in the Hudson studio next Monday.
Okay. Paul Smut bringing us up to date, reviewing the weekly news live from a parking lot across from a creepy-looking cemetery in Massachusetts. Is that correct?
That's it. And don't forget to watch those debates tonight.
Yep. And we're gonna go with the Rascals, and we're gonna go with I Fought the Law and the Law Won. Here it comes.